You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 5th of March. The Jazz drop one at home. The win streak is gone. The Pelicans beat up on Utah's defense. How big a deal in the playoff race? What happened? How relevant to the game coming up in 2 days? And a Time Machine Tuesday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Jazz fall last night to the New Orleans Pelicans. We'll break it down, talk about it, look at it. Do all those things in your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, a lot of geeky numbers, and some insight that hopefully you cannot get anywhere else. Today's program is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai, as well as Slow the Flow. You can get the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. More importantly, when you get in your car, you can tell your smart device, be it your phone or whatever it might be, play podcast Locked On Jazz. So the Jazz fall last night in a game where the defense really just couldn't get stops. The Jazz offense was pretty good. The dribble penetration of the Pelicans was more than the Jazz could handle, and the Jazz simply could not get stops. Last night was the 51st defensive performance of the year by the Jazz, one of the worst. And quite frankly, the Jazz defense has been good but not great for some time now. And I think, you know, the offense has been much better, but since January 21st, the Jazz have only had one defensive game that would have ranked in their top 20 defensive games of the season. We're still the third best defense in the NBA, and there is a level where offenses get better as the year goes on. But the Jazz defense last year got better as the year went on, and the Jazz defense wasn't great to start this year. So, you know, if you look through the defensive ratings, January 21st, the Jazz play Portland. Since then, we held Minnesota to a 99.8 and Phoenix to an 89.5 and the Clippers to a 97.9 and a great defensive performance by Denver to a 97.6. Otherwise, we have not had those dominating one sub-100 defensive ratings. The defensive performance against Milwaukee, when you put it in context of what the Bucks are as an offensive team, was pretty fabulous. But it wasn't one of those dominating performances. Some of this is you're playing better teams and trying to hold them below their average, and we've talked about that a lot. The offense last night was pretty good. It was our 32nd best offensive performance of the year. It wasn't great, largely because one of the things we've been doing so well is going to the free throw line. Last night, we took 14 free throws. The last time we'd taken that few was in Cleveland on the 18th of January, or home against Cleveland on the 18th of January, and prior to that, the January 9th against Orlando. But otherwise, we've been going line 20-plus times, sometimes 30-plus times, simply did not get that at all last night. The offensive rebounding has been a pretty big factor for us last night, throughout this run, and we did that last night and had great assist numbers. I think we finished with 35 assists last night, which was the most assists we've had in a game since we had it in back-to-back games against Oklahoma City and Portland in December. But we'll dig in a little bit more specifically on what caused it, but let's start with our playoff push and look at what the impact of this is. And it's big. You know, we're not going to go undefeated, but losing one at home we didn't anticipate, and just the level that nobody else is blinking makes this difficult. So last night, Denver had a 53% game against San Antonio and lost it. So that's a little bit of a surprise. Denver has, you know, been lost three in a row now. They beat the Mavericks, Clippers, and Thunder. They lost to the Jazz, Pelicans, and Spurs. The Jazz last night was a 79% win probability coming in. And the Jazz, so that was, you know, we have 10 of these games between 60 and 80. The expectation was you were going to win about 9 to 10 of them if you're going to get home court advantage, and we just lost one of them. So that There's not a lot of wiggle room left in that. San Antonio gets their third straight win. The playoff race is almost over, by the way. We'll talk about that. San Antonio, interestingly, after losing three in a row, is now 1-3 in a row. They're 2-1 in pickup game, pick'em games. The Clippers last night had a 22% win probability because they had played the night before and weren't rested, probably classified more as a road game than it was, and they get the win. The Clippers really have clutched up here, have won 4 of 6. The Jazz win over the Clippers looks a little better all of a sudden. And then the Kings beat the Knicks last night. And so the Kings, but that was, you know, the Kings' schedule is brutal. That was an 86 win probability for the Knicks. That is, they now only have, or for the Kings, excuse me, they only have 5 games left where they have a win probability over 60. The Clippers, or the Lakers lose last night, and the Lakers are done. How about that? We're going to have a playoffs without LeBron. The Lakers have played 5 games with a win probability between 40 and 80. They are 1-5. I mean, that is a colossal collapse that they are in the midst of right now. So, just overall, by the way, we're winning 80% of the certain wins. The should wins, which is 60 to 80, is only 9-8 right now. Pick'ems are 7-6. Unlikelies, 20 to 40, are 5-5. No chances are 2-4. Remaining rest of the way, Oklahoma City, Portland, Houston, Utah. So, as of yesterday's games going in, it had everyone notched at 51 wins on 538. This morning, and I don't quite understand why, but the Rockets are at 51. The Thunder have dropped to 50. The Blazers are at 51, and the Jazz have dropped to 50. I'm not sure where the Thunder lost a game by just sitting at home. Interesting, by the way, the Celtics are projected to be at 52. Eastern Conference, 50 for the Celtics. It's pretty bad, considering how. So the Jazz at 36-27 are projecting to go 14-5 the rest of the way to get to 50. My feeling is that teams generally exceed this by a game or two. That Portland and Houston will be at 52, Thunder and Jazz will be at 50, and that if the Jazz are going to get home court advantage, they're probably going to have to go 16-3 the rest of the way. Maybe, I had them at 53, so 17-2 after last night's loss. So last night's game, according to 538, if all goes as planned, is going to turn out to be the difference between Utah possibly having home court and not. If, you know, getting, if Golden State and Houston end up on one side of the bracket, there's certainly an argument of wanting to stay out of that bracket. Those are the two best teams, I think, right now. The other thing that's interesting on the 538 projection with Denver losing last night is for the first time, the 2 seed does not look like it's totally outlandishly out of play. I mean, it seems really unlikely, but Denver is now projected at 53 wins and the Blazers at 51. What's really happening here is this is happening exactly as we thought it would. Remember, my projection at the beginning of the year was the Jazz would win 51-52 with a chance for number 2 because everyone else fell back in. Basketball Reference, whose simulation numbers are usually lower for wins, I'm not sure why, has Denver at 53, Portland at 51, Oklahoma City at 50, Utah at 49, and Houston at 49. So, again, last night, just with a subtle little drop. Now, the problem the Jazz have, frankly, is the rest, there aren't many games left to steal. You just have to win everything. But there's no game left on the Jazz schedule where you win it and it propels you for a win. ESPN now has Denver 53, Portland 51, Houston 50, Oklahoma City 40, or Utah and Oklahoma City at 49. Clippers and San Antonio at 46. That also means our last game of the season, Clippers will likely be playing the way it's projecting right now to avoid the Warriors. So you're going to have a Clipper team playing pretty darn hard that last game of the year. That's not going to be a cakewalk. But the 8 playoff teams in the West are pretty well set at this point. By the way, the interesting one on the Western Conference is how far the Lakers are going to fall. A lot of these projections have the Lakers finishing as the 12th team in the Western Conference. What a story. I mean, I actually, if you go back to our projection system, pack or points, points gained, did not have the Lakers as a playoff team. We had some other things where we, you know, missed New Orleans, who last night, I got a text from someone last night, said, well, that's the New Orleans team you projected. We had them as a home court team. But we didn't have Minnesota as a playoff team. We didn't have the Lakers as a playoff team. There's actually a bunch of areas where we had the Clippers as a playoff team, which seemed nuts. We had the Spurs as a playoff team, which seemed nuts. We had Denver as eighth with the Clippers for the final day of the season, I think, if I'm honest about that. That was, those two were battling for the final day of the season. Obviously missed, as the Nuggets are superior to that. But everything's getting about as tight as we suspected. And certainly didn't have Sacramento as a 500 team. So what happened to the Jazz last night? We'll talk about it when we continue. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. This is, I think, the best way I can explain to you. Oh, by the way, Tyson was at the game last night from Murdoch Chevy. Remember I said I want Tyson to come to a game? And I had a nice conversation with Blake yesterday. Nonetheless, what I wanted to tell you is here's what I would tell you in regards to the Hyundai brand. Maybe the younger listeners kind of already know it. I think some of us older guys don't. Hyundai came into the market and didn't really have great brand awareness at first. So what has been stunning to me about being part of this and working with the Murdochs is getting to know Hyundai. How much value you get for the dollar, how many incredible advanced safety features they have that are on the market first. I have a car right now where you can't open the back side door, kid's door. Basically, if a car is coming by, it can sense that and it closes the door, vacuum shuts it so that the kids don't accidentally open it up into traffic. That kind of level of detail, that is what is so impressive to me and why I've been just kind of wowed by everything I've experienced with Hyundai. It's been really, really cool to get to know everyone and be a part of the Murdoch family and see how they do things. That's been super, super nice. But I think the biggest takeaway for me is the value you get from Hyundai. So if you're in the market for a car and you don't have Hyundai on your list because it's not something you naturally do, me a favor, put it on the list. Stop by, say hi to Jason over at the 4646 South State Street. Say hi to Blake in the down in Linden and at least see what you can get for your dollar. It is slow the flow time. That's right. We're streaky shooters here in Utah, whether it's our weather. As my wife would tell you, it's not streaky right now at all. But even in the winter, and even when we're having this kind of splash, we need to make sure that we conserve our water. Like showering, shorter. The numbers don't lie. If you shower just 1 minute less every day, you save 1,875 gallons. You know what? We talked about this earlier, but if every single one of our listeners on one showered a minute less every day, we would save 26,250,000 gallons of water. The ultra low flow shower head saves as much as 2.5 gallons every minute you shower. We all love Utah. We all love what's here. So make sure you slow the flow. Save H2O and continue to send me emails at dlock09@gmail.com. That's dlock09@gmail.com to let me know how you slow the flow. So what happened to the Utah Jazz last night? Well, defensively, they could not keep the Pelicans out of the paint. The Pelicans are not particularly good outside shooters. And they lead the league at points in the paint. And they play really, really fast. So the first thing was to stop them in transition and make them play in the half court. The Jazz are the best team at the NBA in stopping them in transition. And according to Cleaning the Glass, the Jazz did a really, really good job of stopping them getting in transition. They were only in transition 10% of their possessions. The Jazz just did a terrible job. Once they were in possession transition, the Pelicans scored 2.1 points per transition opportunity last night. One of the over 2 points of possession, one of the single best transition offenses of the year by any team. The flip side is half court. And the Jazz actually did, according to Cleaning the Glass, a half-decent job on it. But what, and the offense by the Jazz was pretty good, except for the Jazz reverted back off live rebounds where the Jazz were so good recently, they reverted back and had a bad night last night. The Jazz had really made an offensive improvement in regards to playing off of live, good defense stops, live rebounds, but they did not last night. They regressed a tiny bit. In the half court, the Jazz did a nice job of keeping the Pelicans in the half court, or in that. But the early offense of the Pelicans and the drag screens by the Pelicans, the Jazz were trying to contain the paint and keep the Pelicans from getting into the paint and forcing them to kind of stay on the outside, and it just didn't work. Julius Randle and Drew Holiday were just a force of nature. Excuse me. And the Pelicans took 64 shots in the paint last night. 64. Now, 36 of them were short mid-range shots. But Holiday is actually pretty good, decent at them. And they made an inordinate amount. They made 18 of 36. But more importantly, that's a game in which they knew what they wanted. You know, it's one thing for us to sit here analytically and say, well, that short mid-range shot that's a floater in the lane is a bad shot. And I generally agree with that. In the case of Holiday, he's one of the best in the league. And when the offense is trying to get it, I think you might have to change your opinion on that ever so slightly, if that makes sense. The Pelicans just lived. And if you really look at the shot chart and not the numbers, those little floaters are all 5, 6, 7, 8 footers. They weren't taking a lot of 11 and 12 and 14 footers. The Jazz had a nice shot distribution. They lived at the rim, had like 8 dunks early, and as the night went on, they actually lost some of that. And the Jazz offense had a terrible, terrible stretch of this basketball game where they just completely fell apart offensively for about 9 minutes of the fourth quarter, and the Pelicans went on the 22-2 run that changed the game. But the story of the night was the Jazz's complete inability to take away where the Pelicans wanted to go. There was not enough defensive resistance by the Jazz to be able to stop the Pelicans and where they wanted to get their shots. If you take the basic shot zone, they were 15 of 27 at the rim, which is not very good. They were 16 of 34 in the paint non-restricted area. That is crazy. Even if they had had, you know, 47% above the league average, which is right around 39-40%, it's the amount of shots is the issue. 34 of them. That just tells you they were getting wherever they wanted to go, whenever they wanted to go. Now, the other issue that happened last night is just the Jazz complete offensive collapse in the fourth quarter. Ingles and Favors had it rolling a little bit as they just went to him every play, and it was a 1-0. The Jazz led it 103-89. The Pelicans, Favors, Gobert comes in for Favors, Rubio comes in for Korver with 7:27 left. Ingles turns it over, timeout on the floor. Now Korver comes in for Ingles, Cephalosa for Crowder. Korver misses a three. Donovan turns it over. Donovan misses a three. Rubio misses a floater. Donovan misses a layup. Donovan misses a 17-footer. Like, one of those goes, this game goes the other way. But all, you know, I thought the Jazz starters played well, but lacked juice all night. And I think that's where the lack of defense resistance was. I thought that the Milwaukee, Denver, Clipper, Oklahoma City emotions kind of, they looked a little bit off last night. Rubio then misses another floater. Wait a second. That's the same one. I just counted it twice. Gobert goes to free throw line, makes both. It's 105-101 with 4:58 left. But now Donovan turns it over again. O'Neal comes in for Korver for defensive reasons. Ingles turns it over. Donovan gets called in an offensive charge where the Jazz ran the same play they ran against Milwaukee a bunch. And New Orleans, to their credit, defended it perfectly. It was an absolute play call. The Jazz had run a ton against where they backpicked the big. Williams switched off the big, cut off the drive. Absolutely fabulous play. And all of a sudden, at this point, 3:06 left, the Jazz are down six. Gobert misses close. Donovan misses another. Ingles turns it over again. I heard a lot of people, because he's the whooping boy of everyone, going after Rubio. You know, Rubio leaves the game here at the four, and Ricky did not have a great night, but let's make sure that for those who want to be critical of Ricky Rubio, you haven't reached a point where you just inanely criticize Rubio with no basis. So it's one, Rubio goes out of the game with the Jazz leading at 105-101. The next possessions by the Jazz without Rubio on the floor are turnover, turnover, turnover. Gobert misses a layup. Donovan misses a three. Turnover. So we can all talk, but that's four of the six possessions where Rubio was not on the floor in this key moment turns into turnovers. Is that because he was off the floor, or is that just like let's be careful, let's just make sure. One, you can't blame him, he wasn't on the floor. And two, had Rubio committed seven turnovers like Joe did last night, we'd be killing him. Let's just make sure you're being fair. The other thing that's interesting about last night to me is the entire narrative of the night changes because on that final play, when Elfrid Payton grabs the rebound out of Joe Ingles' hands, Holiday misses. They forced him into a miss. The rebound bounced on. Ingles has it in his arm, seemingly, and then it gets knocked out, and Payton rips it away from him. Payton goes back up, slides by Gobert, and scores. I don't know if Joe, watching the replay from a different angle, I'm not sure Joe ever had full. It's not a steal. It never gave him full, but, I mean, he had his hands on it. If Joe grabs that rebound, here's the narrative. Rudy Gobert had three of the most incredible defensive plays. Donovan had gotten through yet another fourth quarter of struggles and gone down and scored on two layups in the open floor and missed on one. And Gobert, who had set a pick at 35 feet, had followed in to grab the offensive rebound and dunk it in a just incredible play with 1:12 left. Gobert blocks a shot with 53 seconds left. Donovan takes it coast-to-coast to give us the lead with 43 seconds. The Jazz corral that rebound, in this case Joe specifically, because he's the one who had his hands on it. And our narrative right now is that the Stars rose to the occasion and got it done after a brutal 22-2 run. That's the sign of, right? Like, let's be, it's a bad loss. I showed you that at the beginning. I mean, right now that loss is probably the difference between home court and not home court. But when you're analyzing this game and how you feel about things, like that's literally the one little thing right there is changing entirely how we feel about this. 22-2 run was bad. Defense wasn't good all night. Those things go to the forefront. And the turnovers late go to the forefront. Whereas if Ingles grabs that rebound, we're talking about Rudy Gobert's incredible defense for three straight plays, amazing hustle off the pick and the jam follow, and Donovan going to lay it up in it. And Donovan making two of his final three shots. And the Jazz getting one more defensive stop on another great Gobert defensive play, and the Jazz win it. And we're talking about the resiliency and the fortitude and all those things. It's funny how that works. All right, Time Machine Tuesday is next on today's program. Remember, when you get in your car, just tell your smart speaker or your smart device in the car to play podcast Locked on Jazz. Great Locked on NBA Tuesday edition with Ben Golliver of the Washington Post joining Wes and David today, so make sure you grab that. We'll do Time Machine Tuesday when we come back on Locked on Jazz. All right, let's jump out to the year 2007-2008 is what we've pulled for this year. We'll go to March 5th. The Jazz played the Minnesota Timberwolves and blew them out 105-76. The Jazz won their third straight. The Jazz were 40-22. This team was so good. Jazz started Deron Williams, Ronnie Brewer, C.J. Miles, Carlos Boozer, and Mehmet Okur. Paul Millsap, Kyle Korver, Matt Harper, and Ronnie Price off the bench with Jason Hart and Jaren Collins. Korver had 12 points in 21 minutes. Jazz were led by Deron's 21-11. Boozer had 16-14. Memo had 15-9. The Timberwolves were not good. They were 12-48. They had Randy Foy, Sebastian Telfair, Kirk Snyder, Al Jefferson, Ryan Gomes, and the Jazz just blew them out at home in just a whitewash. 105-96. The Jazz would go on to win five straight, go to 42-22. And then never really got it back that year. They finished the year 12-6. Going down the stretch, won four in a row in the middle. Played Houston in that five-game series in 2008. I believe that's the where, yeah, Deron, Memo, and everyone. Actually, that's the series where they crushed in 2008. I think I'm back for that series. They crush him. Well, that might be Hot Rod's last year. I think this might be Hot Rod's last year. They crush him in six, pretty well manhandle Houston, and then go to L.A., lose the first two there, quick turnaround, come back, beat the Lakers in game three, and then lose that overtime. Oh, yeah, that afternoon overtime game that then swings that series. It's too bad. The team was really good. 54-28, they were the number one ranked offense, 12th ranked defense. Just weren't quite good enough defensively. It's funny to go back and look at that. That team, it's funny, I always look at that team and think they should have shot more threes and done more of that. They were the number one offensive team in the league. I guess they shouldn't have done anything differently. They were 27th in the league in three-point attempts, third best effective field goal percentage, and number one offense in the league. The problem, really, of those teams was they fouled way too much. They were third, and that in turn usually leads to bad road teams. Fouling, there's statistical evidence that shows if you don't foul a lot, you're a pretty good road team. Similar to this year's Jazz team. But the Jazz were 30th in fouling. Third in forcing turnovers, 9th in rebounding, 30th in fouling. Pretty darn good team, though. All right, that's your Time Machine Tuesday. Hope you enjoyed the show today. We'll join you tomorrow from New Orleans. It is Mardi Gras, and we are heading to the heart of it all. Hopefully, I'll be alive by tomorrow morning. I don't party and go out, so I'll be fine, unless the madness of New Orleans just encompasses us all. Have a great one. Talk to you soon. Make sure you go tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On NBA. Have a great day.